time for our 5 p.m. Eastern special one-hour edition of Real Kipper and Bourne. We are live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, and Jake the Snake Schultz. Jen?
Oh, it is Jen.
Yeah.
Crap.
See, I got no names at all on them.
No, it's Jen today.
It's Jen.
It's Jen.
Welcome aboard, yeah. Jen.
I can tell it's Jen because all of it's a different style of shooting for television.
Is that right?
Well, we're a little closer. Oh, feel a little softer with Jen.
Not sure where anyone stands on the official announcement that Brendan Shanahan is no longer a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs on the executive leadership team. It was an announcement that became official maybe a few hours ago, 3 hours ago. I'll start with you, JB, just in terms of big surprise, not a surprise at all.
Yeah, not a surprise at all. You know, I think we made that clear earlier and throughout this week that we expected it to happen at some point. Brad Treliving, they have announced, will keep his job. Elliot Friedman reported that. It's tough to really know. You know, here's my comparison for the Shanahan era. It's a lot like the John Tavares contract that he, you know, oversaw come here, where I don't think you can look at it and go, well, that was an abject failure. But it definitely didn't get you where you hoped it would.
Mm.
Is that a fair comparable?
I love that.
I think
that's very well done.
You know, in both cases, you kind of leave going, it went pretty good.
Yeah, like, you know, there's other ways it could have gone.
It could have gone worse, could have gone better. It was okay.
Brendan put out an official statement, right?
Yeah. You have it in front of you? I can find it here quickly.
Yeah, you find it because you're the
I put
it
behind
reader.
It. It's the front.
You're,
no, I put
think,
the.
You're the reader on the show.
You think I'm good at this?
Okay. Yeah, you are.
Oh, that boy. It's pretty small. I think I got my glasses on today. Following a meeting today, I was informed that I was no longer going to remain as president and alternative governor of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I want to thank the board of MLSE for the tremendous support they have shown me over my tenure. Toronto is where I was born and raised, where my family still lives, and being a part of the historic franchise will always be one of the greatest honors of my life. I want to thank the entire Maple Leaf staff for their commitment and hard work over the years. They are second to none in the National Hockey League. I want to thank the alumni for all their support and the tremendous work they do at our games and within the community. Many of them were my heroes growing up, and it has been a pleasure to get to know them on a personal level. He's talking about you there, Kipper, for sure. I want to thank the fans for their passion and their loyalty. Your love for the team inspired me every day. While I'm proud of the rebuild we embarked on starting in 2014, ultimately I came here to help win the Stanley Cup, and we did not. There is nothing more I wanted to deliver our fans, and my biggest regret is that we could not finish the job. I greatly enjoy working with Brad and Craig. I firmly believe they are excellent in their roles and have done a great job in their time with the team. Also, I want to thank the players and their committed and passionate. Oh, I was getting so good. They are committed and passionate about delivering a championship to this city and will do everything within their power to accomplish that goal. I want to wish them all the very best. Thank you, Brandon.
Well done, Sam.
Thank you. Only one stumble?
Yeah. No, really it's good. Fine. It's well done. And I mean, I know you were kind of saying it tongue in cheek, but I'll talk about that personal part first and foremost, that I love that he mentioned the alumni and the support and the community. To me, there was no better guy for us as an alumni, selfishly speaking, than him. Mm-hmm. And at times over the years with the Leafs, and a lot of clubs go through this throughout the NHL, is sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not so great, and you kind of get forgotten a little bit. And it's tough on guys that have worn
their Milbury era, and it didn't go over
and
well.
You grew up with it, right? Yeah. You know, in the island, there's not a lot of teams. Just yeah, they like you, but they don't really like you enough to actually
want you around,
invest in you, find value in you. Mm-hmm. Brendan was amazing for our alumni, and on a personal note, he was always great to me. Always a gentleman. Took my calls, had lunch with him on a few occasions. I mean, he tried. You know, we did that show yesterday, and I thought it was a good show, right? And then I kind of got a little cringy on myself that you know, we sit here, and Brendan, Kyle, all those guys, John Ferguson, we go down the path, right? All the way down. They're like, they're made to make really tough decisions.
Yep.
And at the time, you just don't know. And then there's the three of us and thousands of us who have shows that just get to go on the air, sometimes a little pompous, and play Monday morning armchair quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's all I was yesterday, was just after the fact. Like, who can't?
Whoa.
No, I'm telling you. No, a lot of it's after the fact. I'll stand by what I said. Mm-hmm. I'll stand what I... but I'm an idiot sometimes because I come across like I had all the answers all along, right? I'm just speaking about me, Sam. I'm not speaking about anybody else.
No, it's a great point, and I appreciate the point you're making.
It's really hard what they do, and all of those decision makers, there's only one team that gets to say, I did it right every year. One.
Yeah.
And the rest of them, we can go through some tough decisions. And
that list was pretty bad.
It's not the point I'm making.
Management. Okay. I understand the point the Kip is making
here,
which is, not to say that anyone else in those roles would have been mistake-free over the past decade, 11 years, whatever. But I do think it's important to comb through the tenure.
We did. We did, for sure. Yeah. And I'm not apologizing for the angles we took or what we said. And I stood by what I said, told you guys last year. Somebody's got to go last year of the core four. Mm-hmm. And I said, I told you guys last year, Marner's got to go. Like, you got to trade him. You just got to trade him. He just can't go back to the well again. Mm-hmm. So, it's not like we completely Monday morning armchair quarterback. We stuck with a lot of the things that we said.
Yeah.
But yesterday I was like a little over the top.
Ah, I think it was important to go through it all, and whether it was harsh,
You can have regrets.
No. But that's just maybe the ex-player in me a little bit.
No, absolutely. And like I say, when I was doing video coaching, if you can make anyone look good or bad on any given day, we have that opportunity to, highlight certain things as well here. So
go ahead.
What do you think will be, like, when people look back on this tenure in, let's say, 15 years?
Yeah.
What will people say about it? When you're having a beer with your grandkids, what will you say? Well, maybe not a beer with your grandkids, having a beer with your grandkids around.
Yeah.
I don't know. How will you speak of it?
Can I jump in on that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the one thing, I wanted to add on the whole Shanahan thing, I moved to Toronto in 2012, and the reputation of the Toronto Maple Leafs when I moved here was not then what it is now. He is leaving them better than he found them. I think they're a bit of a punchline when I first moved here.
Yeah.
I remember there's a cover of, I think, the Toronto Sun, and it's like Phil Kessel is a superhero and Dion Phaneuf and all this, like, I think the organization's in good shape. I tweeted that for the Islanders fans, this would be an awesome hire if they could get Shanahan. And I had some people write to me, well, they didn't win. Why? And I understand that they didn't win, but there's a lot that goes into being a president of a major organization.
Yeah.
And they are respected. They did things the right way by the alumni. They got a lot right.
Okay. But there's a chance you can get a lot right when you have unlimited funds too. And I will say this, he made a great decision because he had to go upstairs or to the board and explain that why he wants to invest money in the alumni, and he got it.
Mm-hmm.
He got it. But that comes with power. That comes with the funds. Mm-hmm. Like, there's 29 other general managers or presidents that will go to their owner or their board and say, I really want to do this for the alumni. And it's like, nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
So, it really helped him that he had the unlimited funds, including building departments that rank amongst the biggest in professional sports at any cost.
The ROI on those has been great. The large departments.
There's no link to success.
Right.
Is your point.
That so is
where
exactly
where
what
is
saying.
Where is the value in the money and the departments that we spent? And I'm sure as we're speaking, they're combing through that right now.
Yeah.
I would say that to your point about the punchline thing. Mm-hmm. I think he came in and they were a punchline for one reason. But I wouldn't say with him leaving, they're any, like on the way out, I'd say they're a punchline in a different way. Like a lot of, like as a fan,
yeah,
looking across the league, and they're all, people are always going to hate on Leaf fans. But like his decision, which ultimately it is, to stick with the core four, mm-hmm, and try to see it through, and not trade Marner when they had the chance, not trade Willie when they had the chance, whatever with Matthews, all these different things, his decisions,
yes,
led to where we are now.
Correct. And Sam, you're a punchline because you're not winning the Stanley Cup, not because don't matter.
No,
and it felt like the Leafs didn't matter.
Sure, that's for sure. But like the playoff failures of these guys where they've won two rounds over their 90 and their first round stuff and all these different punchlines that have come with it,
yeah,
like – I understand and I respect his decision to be committed to a core four, and I understand, but he needed to pivot earlier.
That's what people will remember, is that you double down and you triple down.
Yes.
On the quadruple same group.
Quadruple down.
How
do you say nine down?
On the same group when others said, that's enough.
And yeah, and it's just, it's really hard now. That, and you wrote about Marner today, and
Toronto Star
today. It's a really, I'm sure, part of what was talked about today at their meeting before he was eventually, you know, not having his contract renewed. The handling of Mitch Marner and the way this has gone. Like, I don't know how that isn't a big time factor in being the president. Like, that is a huge.
Well.
Is
it, it's a big deal because you got to explain why a guy that was destined to be the all-time leading point getter in the history of the franchise, mm-hmm, is walking out the door in the prime of his career
for nothing. Like, there is a world where you make the Marner trade 2 years ago and you have whatever you get back in that, and you can look back and having him leave for nothing and seemingly with this resentment towards the franchise and the hate with the fans and all this stuff is an abject failure. It is. And it's like, it just, that's a huge detriment to his time here, where there's lots of great things. And like, they, like you said, I used to just be like, can they make the playoffs? And then mm-hmm, they never stopped making the playoffs. And it was a different hurdle that they couldn't get over. But the Marner thing is massive. It just is. So I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. Let's go to our first guest.
Our only guest.
We're only up
for an hour.
So. All right. Yeah. David Amber.
Hey. How you guys doing?
Of Sportsnet NHL and Hockey Night in Canada. We're well. Covering the Stanley Cup playoffs for Sportsnet. Thanks for joining us on an off day, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a busy day, obviously, with all the news that's breaking. I just heard Canada lost to Denmark at the World Series.
Yeah, whoa. What?
David, just... give us a chance to get our breath here on the Leafs before we go to the rest of the country, okay?
pretty wild.
Just your overall thoughts after 11 seasons for Brendan Shanahan, and there's no question with the press release through Keith Pelly, the respect factor goes into a guy of that stature, but, you know, 11 years is a long time also to get a crack at winning a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I mean, we all know the stakes in pro sports are incredibly high. There is a lot of turnover. We see with coaches, with GMs, and even at the president level, and the expectations are high, and this isn't a unique thing to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, sports is at its base about winning and losing, and the Leafs have had a certain level of success, certainly under Brendan Shanahan, and I don't think we can dismiss that. And, you know, I think we even made a point on Sunday's broadcast of saying, look, there's 26 other teams that would have loved to have been there in the final five teams standing this year and to have taken the defending champions to the seventh game, in a winner-take-all scenario. Like, there's something to be said for that. But when that is the greatest achievement that's been accomplished through a 10-year tenure, with the expectations to be much, much higher based on, you know, the skilled players at the Leafs' disposal and all the expectations that came with getting these skilled players lined up and where this franchise was hoping to go, There's been an equal amount of disappointments, and then there's going to be change because of those things. So, you know, I think Brendan Shanahan could probably be really proud of some of what's taken place in his tenure leading the Maple Leafs. And I'm sure there'd be some missteps along the way that he'd like to have do-overs. And he probably understands that. I'm, you know, he's a smart guy. He's been in an executive role in some capacity since he left his playing days in the NHL. He understands how the executive offices work, and I'm sure he respects, you know, what's taken place and understands that. And, you know, there have been cries 3-4 years ago, what's going to happen with Brendan Shanahan? And I think, you know, Maple Leaf Sport and Entertainment really allowed sort of not second chances, but allowed this whole process to take full bloom. I don't think anything was left to be discovered. I think, you know, the plan was in place and there was aspects of it that worked really well and aspects clearly that didn't get the Leafs ultimately where they wanted to go. And there's going to be change because of that. I mean, I don't think anyone's saying this with any surprise. I listen to your guys' show on a regular basis. I you know, we're in the studio talking about these sorts of moments, and this has been sort of predicted or expected by many in the hockey community for some time. And today is that day.
Yeah, you've been in your role for some time and following all these teams and the evolution of the president role. Am I out of my mind in feeling like, I don't know, when Brendan hired, it didn't feel like the president was so tied to direct hockey results. Like, I understand that when you're the top of the pyramid, you're on the hook at the end of the day, but it felt like the general manager was the player decider.
Yeah, and just before you go on, Dia, I know that Brendan was under that roof for many years, and it was really a lot about corporate, right? Meeting and marketing, and there's so many aspects outside of who's on the ice and what lines are going to be going, and he did leave it, from everything I gathered, to his general manager and his coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, listen, I know the inner workings of the relationship between Brendan Shanahan and Brad Treliving? I'm not going to pretend, and Craig Berube, I'm not going to pretend to know that. What I'm going to say is there's some owners in professional sports, and certainly in the NHL, that don't really feel they need an intermediary between the GM, who's calling the shots hockey-wise, and themselves. They feel they can just reach out to their GM and they don't need that extra layer. We've seen in Canadian markets where we seem to have that, you know, whether it's in Vancouver, whether it's in Montreal, we see that in most Canadian markets, there is that intermediary, and how much they're involved in the business side of things, because MLSE is an incredibly huge business, and how much they're involved in the hockey side of things. So that's interesting. That is an interesting sort of comment to make, Nick and Justin. And I think, you know, there's going to be a president. I don't think they're suddenly just going to say, well, we don't need a president anymore. But there are teams that operate without that buffer. I mean, look at the Dallas Stars, right? They're a team. They have their ownership, and below their ownership, there's Jim Nill, who's the GM, and they don't really have an extra layer, an extra person there. And obviously things are working very well for the Dallas Stars. So every group's different. How much say Brendan Shanahan had in the hockey part of things, I'm not sure.
Well, it did change, though. It did change. Evolved, right? It evolved. It went from Lou, obviously, to Kyle. Those guys seem to have more control on the day-to-day part. And then even recently with Brad Treliving, I think it did force Brendan to focus more on the hockey department than the business of the Leafs the last year and a half. So In essence, it may have been too late, right?
Well, one thing, Nick, is there is certainly a philosophical change between the way Kyle Dubas oversaw this team and the way Brad Treliving, and he made it very clear from the day he walked in the office. You know, Brad Treliving is someone who is from the same school as Brian Burke as far as the hockey product and what will cause success on the ice, and he said it. You know, Brian Burke used the adjective truculence, and Brad Treliving, you know, used it, you know, very clearly, said we need more snot on this team. Kyle Dubas was more reluctant to speak in those terms. He always thought, you know, puck possession.
Skill.
Power play. Skill. And I think Brad Treliving said, we love the skill. We need more will. And I'm not sure where Brendan Shanahan played out. He might have seen it from both sides. You know, he's a very smart and thoughtful hockey executive. And how much of his input and imprint was there with Brad Treliving? Again, I'm not sure. But at the end of the day, I think all it comes down to is you have a decade to sort of figure out where this team is going, to get it to as far a place as it can go. And if it doesn't meet the expectations of the fan base, the media, but most importantly, internally, internally what the expectations were, then there's going to be changes. We just saw this in Los Angeles, and we're seeing it now. And we saw it in the New York Islanders, and we're seeing it now, you know, here in Toronto. And I just, you know, I don't think we should need to read much more into it than it was maybe the natural evolution that, you know, this was sort of the last kick of the can for both some of the players. We know the core group's going to change, and for some of the management as well. I think it's just sort of all goes hand in hand.
Kip, this is as much for you as DA, but like as he leaves, is there really anything you can point to organizationally where you'd say this is something they got to do better? Like I have the one beef.
Yeah.
What's yours? Go ahead.
Public relations.
That's it. That's exactly what mine is.
Of course it is, because we've worked for 4 years together.
Yeah, well, it's the similar complaints, and I can't speak, DA.
They got to get reconnected with the fans.
It does feel right now, DA, that like expectations, it kind of feels like the fans are a little taken for granted. I just know personally, you know, I've been doing the show with 4 years for Nick. We've never talked Auston Matthews, you know, like it, not once. You know, so some of that stuff to me, I feel like you would work for the fans a little bit more to bring down the wall a bit.
Yeah. I agree with you guys. I really would like to see more access. I don't think it's a bad thing. I understand. And, you know, we had Lou Lamoriello, who wouldn't allow us to speak to any of the rookies in their rookie season.
Right.
Auston Matthews scores 4 goals in his first game as a Maple Leaf. And, you know, our poor ringside reporters asking Brad Boyes, what's it like watching Auston Matthews score 4 goals? You know, yeah, it's so implausible. It's laughable because
it's laughable.
Seem like yeah. PR 101. And again, I don't want to be sitting here crapping on anyone, but I philosophically believe the media doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's a liaison to the fans.
Yeah.
And the more access you have, they get to see these great personalities. They get to see these great characters. They get to see this great Will. There's a fine line. I get it. You want to protect these young 18-year-old players as they come into the league, but there's something that ends up causing a level of resentment sometimes through the media or through the fan base if they feel, you know, they're held on a pedestal, but they're not necessarily always held accountable, or we're not getting a chance to see the human side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and access has been a real issue. And I think that's something that philosophically I'd like it from the top, them just discuss it. What are the upsides and what are the downsides? Yeah. And at the end of the day, I've always said, look, I interview a lot of people, as do you. They have control of the interview. As the interviewer, we can guide where it's going, but they always have the choice to be like, yeah, I'm not comfortable talking about that, or I'd rather, you know, next question, let's talk about something else, or I don't have a comment on that, I don't have a thought on that. The person you're asking controls what's coming out of their mouths. So I've always felt like as much as I can control some of the areas with which the discussion will go, ultimately, I'm at the mercy of what the interviewee has to offer. And, you know, again, I've always said I'm not Mike Wallace walking in there trying to, you know, bring down the doors. If you don't know who Mike Wallace is, you know, the old journalist on 60 Minutes. But, you know, I don't mean you, but, you know, some of the younger listeners and viewers. We're, you know, again, we're a liaison for the team. We're there. I'm always of the mindset. I'm an enthusiastic sports fan. I want to promote the game. I want to promote the players. I want to tell good stories. It's not about bringing people down. And certainly there's got to be accountability held, but I don't think the average person in sports broadcasting in the media is there to destroy lives and destroy careers. I think it's about, let's embrace the great moments and let's share it all together, because there's such a passion, especially with a fan base of a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think a lot of that's just been forgotten throughout the years. And I'm not sure why, because when I broke into this business back with the Matt Sundins and everyone else, the relationships were much stronger. You know, Nick, you played in the 1990s, and, you know, it feels like there's a lot more acrimony now between the fan base and the players and the media and the players. And it really doesn't have to be that way.
As the price keeps going up to go watch these players. You are watching and listening to David Amber, studio host, Hockey Night in Canada, NHL on Sportsnet in Dallas, covering the Oilers and the Stars. So I think in Keith Pelley's press release, he talked about, if I'm not mistaken, Sam, a new voice. And if it is, do we expect someone in to come in at a president type of position, or do we expect it to disappear and stay in the hands of just Brad Treliving, which Elliot reported will be back next season? We know Craig Berube's not going anywhere. So what do you expect on if there is a different voice in charge, at what level?
Wow, that's a very tough question to ask of someone who's not inside.
Okay,
those
okay, let me rephrase it. Do you expect a new voice, or can they get away with just eliminating Brendan's job and just keeping it in the hands of Brad Tree Living and Craig Berube?
What if, and this is speculation I've heard, and not like more just people talking. You know, I've talked to a lot of hockey people, as do you guys. What if Brad Tree Living was promoted to the president's level and there was another person brought in as a GM under Brad? I don't know. Is that a possibility?
So,
is that
something? So
that
could Brad a new voice go to Brad Tree Living at a higher level? JB?
I don't see why not. I mean, it's possible, right? I think he's a pretty well-respected guy. And, it doesn't quite seem like a new voice at that point to me, Kip. It seems like that vision would have been aligned the past couple of years. But yeah.
For me, it's less about, like, whose voice it is and more about, like, what's being said and how it's being said and how will it sound different from years past. So in the PR department, it's not, you don't necessarily need a new voice, but you need a new message is more important to me than a new voice.
Right.
Let me ask you guys something though. Brad Tree Living, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he's been in for, is it two plus years? Is that right? Wasn't he hired in May of 2020?
Yep, that's right. Yep.
Two full seasons. He could argue that this group of players, as much as he liked a lot of it, wasn't, you know, he was handed this group of players and he's then started in the 2 years to put some of his identity on the team.
Which he did, but just not enough or not enough time.
Yeah, not enough time. I think if I was Brad Tree Living and I was arguing, you know, like, well, you're part of the problem or whatever, if someone's addressing him and that, he'd be like, well, wait a minute, you know, I took over this team and there was things I liked about it. There's a lot of things I didn't like about it. And it's taking some time to move through it all. And I'm, you know, helping putting my identity on the team. It just doesn't seem like he's been given a full range of to create a team under the guise of what he necessarily would want. And I think he'd put pieces in place, but it probably didn't completely fit the vision that he's probably had of what the team would be when it's complete.
Yeah. We good to turn the page on that?
I'm good.
Okay, let's just quickly. Canada lost, huh?
Yeah, I don't have anything to tell you. I'm on a text chain and it's like Denmark beats Canada. I'm like, what? I'm surprised I'm breaking news here.
Ehlers to Olsson. He got in behind Philippe Deneau on the back door and put it over Binnington. Oh,
18-1 underdogs.
18-1 dogs.
Like, they're eliminated.
They're eliminated. They beat Crosby, McKinnon, Celebrini, Fleury. And they had two NHL players on the team.
Who's the general manager of the team again?
Oh, come on. It's Kyle Dubas.
Those are pretty good players he picked, Kip. I'd have taken those guys too.
I so desperately want him to do well. Seriously. No. Yeah, I'm serious. I'm dead serious. Like, this guy cannot buy a break. He can't buy a break.
Can't say he didn't bring the best players available.
Yeah, without watching a second of the game, it's really hard to comment what the heck happened. But I'm just shocked that, you know, hey, listen, I watch March Madness religiously when it comes out. Every year, or most every year, this year was an exception. All the four number ones got to the final. But every year, there's seemingly a two lose to a 15 or a 3-14. On any given Sunday, as they say, anything can happen. And I guess that's what happened. Without watching the game, I don't know. But, man, that is a bit of a shocker because they did assemble essentially as good on paper a world championship team as Canada's had in some time.
All right, Oilers time. We're going to talk about the playoffs. Right,
You go.
You were there covering game one, the Oilers leading 3-1 in that game and had it all go awry. What did you see, D.A.?
And they were good, too.
They were really good. McDavid was flying.
Luke Gazdick and I were on at the second intermission, and talk about eating your words. We talked about the maturity of the Oilers, how they were playing with purpose and passion, and it was the best 40 minutes we had seen. I went as far as to say, the thing about this Oilers team is, you know, in the first round, they gave up multiple goals in 8 different periods. In the second round against Vegas, they only gave up multiple goals in a period 3 times. Talking to the players this morning, which we did talk to them, they said, you know, we just won't let things get away from us. The game won't slip through our fingers, da-da-da. We said all this, and then they went out and allowed
it's all slipping through their fingers as they're challenging.
Yeah, and I turned to Luke, and I'm like, oh, my God. Like, yeah. It was the second time this year they've allowed 5 goals in a period. lot of chatter before the series is the special teams, and it's been almost this Freaky Friday flip around. Last year, the Oilers, they were, their PK was historical, right? 94%, 66 of 70. Last year in the Western Conference Final, Dallas went 0 for 14 on the power play. I said to Peter DeBoer, what did you learn about last year's Western Conference Final that'll help you this year? And he goes, well, we can't go 0 for 14 on the power play. And he laughed. And we said, yeah, special teams will be big. Well, special teams were huge. That was the difference. It was a 5-minute implosion of a meltdown, 3 power play goals by Dallas. There's so many things you could point out. Guys not getting in the lane. Stuart Skinner not battling hard enough like we saw. Hellebuck didn't battle hard enough to find those loose pucks in the first round versus St. Louis. It was eerily similar to that, or it was eerily similar to Stuart Skinner in the first round versus L.A. And I was a little surprised Chris Knobloch didn't call a timeout at some point to try and just calm the team down, because it just slipped through their fingers in a matter of 5 minutes. Give Dallas some credit. They don't give up. They have resilience. They came back, obviously, in Game 7 versus Colorado. They've shown that ability. That was their 6th comeback win this postseason. Edmonton has 6 comeback wins, and now Dallas has 6 comeback wins. But it's put a lot of pressure on Edmonton to find their way in Game 2, because Dallas, in a way, stole that game, gentlemen. They were done after 40 minutes. Wasn't based on the 2-goal deficit they faced, but it was just Edmonton was winning every metric of the game and looked in complete control, and it completely fell apart like a $2 watch in a 5-minute span.
Yesterday we had Kevin Lowe, 6-time Stanley Cup champion, on the show, and then I posed this question to the guys as well. How important was it for Skinner to get off to a good start so no one can turn around and start questioning him? Does game one, unfortunately, plant a little bit of the seed of doubt in terms of is the Oilers' goaltending going to get them through?
To me, it does. I mean, and I like Stuart Skinner. I think, and we talked a lot about how he has he's working on his mental game and all that. But at the end of the day, this is Stuart Skinner's stat line this year. 6 goals allowed, 5 goals allowed, 4 goals allowed, 0 goals allowed, 0 goals allowed, 5 goals allowed. It's been an all or nothing proposition, guys, allowing 4, 5, and 6 goals in a game. And that's basically what we've seen, except for those 2 shutouts, which were great. Which Stuart Skinner is going to show up? And then at the other end of the ice, Jake Oettinger has been rock solid. I think he's been the best game for game goalie so far in the playoffs. Bobrovsky's been right there as well. But Oettinger, just solid as a rock. And that's hard when you're staring down the other end and the other guy, you're going to have a hard time beating them. And if your guy is on, great. But if he's not on, not so great. And let's remember, Calvin Pickard, who's a perfect 6-0, who battles, he's out. He's not even with the team. So yeah. Rodrigue, who's 158-pound backup, he's played 1 NHL game. There's nowhere really to turn. If you're Chris Knobloch, I'm not quite sure what option you have. I mean, Stuart Skinner is going to start. You hope he's going to be the good Stuart Skinner who got his swagger back in those 2 games versus Vegas. But, he was part of that meltdown yesterday, 100%.
I'm sorry. Did you say 158 pounds?
That's what I'm hearing, yeah.
That's not very many pounds. That's half of Anthony Stolarz.
But yeah, that's your left leg.
We were talking about that. I was talking about that with some hockey guys today, and one of them said, yeah, he's 158 pounds. I said, no, that can't be. And I remember, who was it? Ryan Miller was about 160 pounds, and, Darren Pang.
Hey, 6'1", like, Rodrigue.
Yeah, what does it say? What does it list them at?
6'1", 158.
That's me in high school.
Oh, my God. Tread water in a test tube.
Yeah, I mean, so listen, it's goaltending is not about his weight, but my point is, are you going to take at the most important time of year, are you going to put in a guy who's just untested, right? And it doesn't seem fair. And that's not even being discussed. But my point is, it has to be Stuart Skinner right now. And you don't want to get into another 2-0 series deficit. Tomorrow's game is really big. And listen, Stuart Skinner has shown the ability to bear down and be great. He has shown that ability. Hopefully he can show that ability in game 2, because if he's subpar, I think you're going to get a better game from Dallas than you got in that game 1 victory. So you're going to get Dallas's better game. You're going to need better goaltending to combat that.
One more for me. Miro Heiskanen, of course, factoring in huge in game 1. When does Matthias Ekholm factor in for the Oilers?
First question we asked today in Chris Knobloch's availability, and he said not ready to go game two. I watched him skate yesterday, and Chris Cuthbert and I were talking. He's like, he looked pretty good. Like, maybe he's ready. And I was surprised when they ruled him out of the first two games, and I thought maybe after losing game one, they would change that whole ruled him out of game one and or added to game two. And Chris Knobloch today said not ready, will not play in game two. So he'd be helpful. And that's part of the PK, guys. Like, that was a big reason why – you know, the traffic in front of Stuart Skinner will be appreciably less when you have the Viking there, you know, forcibly moving bodies out from in front of the net. And he can do that. So that will be a big addition. Let's hope we see him in Edmonton for games three and four. So that is a good question, Nick. And let's be hopeful he's back, because that is a big part of their blue line. Having said that, guys, he's played three shifts since March 26th. So it took Haskinen a few games to ramp up. Haskinen went 14 minutes, 18 minutes, 23 minutes. Last night he was excellent. 24 minutes, he was everything you would expect. It might take Ekholm a game or two to get back into that, you know, game-ready Stanley Cup playoff Western Conference final shape.
What are you guys doing in Dallas tonight? Cool stuff? Yeah,
you and Luke, where are you guys going?
We are heading out. We're grabbing dinner with a few other colleagues. Hopefully Gene will join us, and we're going to watch the Panther game. I call it the Panther game. I guess I should call it the Hurricane Panther game. But we're going to go watch Carolina and Florida game two and have a bite to eat. And it's sizzling. I know it's horrible in Toronto right now. My wife tells me it's like 2 degrees. It's like 35 degrees and hot here. So Gene is three more shades darker than me.
I want you straight home after dinner.
Yeah, we'll be home early. You got a curfew for me?
Yes, I do. All right, David, thanks for doing this, pal. Keep up the great work, and enjoy the rest of the series, Oilers and the Stars.
Yeah, it should be great. Thanks for having me on. Busy time in the world of the NHL, and you guys are all over. It's great to see.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
David Amber, host of Hockey Night in Canada, NHL on Sportsnet. So 158 pounds.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Do you know, at 158 pounds, you don't go for an x-ray. They just hold you up in front of a light bulb.
You got any more knee smackers over there?
It's crazy to be 158 professional athlete. That's
158
tough.
Is wild.
That's tough.
Maybe grade six.
Is he a jockey? Like what other athletes 158?
He's 6'1".
I know.
Like, that's crazy. Game time?
Game time.
It's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. I'm looking at the Panthers in Carolina again tonight, and Bet365 is going back to the well with the Carolina Hurricanes as big faves tonight.
It just feels like this is a way to make money here.
Minus 135 tonight are the Carolina Hurricanes. The Florida Panthers are plus 115 on the money line.
You did Panthers last game.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did, and then I lost my winnings last night.
Are they getting better? Are they just getting better?
Listen, if they win tonight, it's four games.
Four.
So I guess that's what they're kind of playing in here, that how bad Carolina needs this game and all that. But I just think Florida's way better.
But how many goals did A.J. Greer and Jonah Gatchin score in the Leafs? And they scored last game, and
they weren't even playing. He put in a whole new fourth line, and they just immediately started lighting it up. It's really frustrating.
I like that Greer is a guy down the lineup.
Oh,
really,
man.
Frustrating.
Really good.
Yeah, he's heavy.
Yeah, so that's surprising. And looking ahead to tomorrow night, Oilers underdogs in Dallas. Definitely has the feel of letting one get away. I guess we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get into it. And give me tonight a goal scorer. Give me Sam Reinhart to score a goal tonight at plus 200. I like Sam Reinhart to score a goal.
I'm going to bet Aho to get a zillion shots.
Aho to get shots? How many shots do you want?
I think he's going to get four shots tonight.
Sebastian Aho shots. Why am I having such a hard time with this? You want, how many shots did you say?
Four.
It's plus 230.
There you go.
Yep.
One of my biggest misses was Sam Reinhart when he was in Buffalo. And
Never saw it.
No.
I thought he couldn't skate. I was like, he's not tough. He can't skate.
Can't skate. Not tough. Like, he's going to be this third. He'll be lucky to stay on the third line in the NHL.
I thought he was a Buffalo Sabre. Like, a perfect Sabre. He was just toiled there getting good. 25. I know, he's unbelievable.
The only thing I'll remember about really this Stanley Cup playoffs this year is Simone Benoit bearing him behind the net. absolutely filling him in.
Can't get hit much harder, quite honestly.
And he gets up like nothing. No look at the referee, no shaking his head, no on one knee.
Not the getting up to me, it's continuing to play hockey part.
Think about that elevating your team. And Benoit's hit supposed to do that for the Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
And Reinhart gets up like it's nothing. Like, that's the best you got? I'm coming right back at you.
So I guess you like a plus 200 goal for Sam Reinhart tonight.
Yes, I do.
That was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Bet 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
All right. Boy, that was a fast, 40 minutes?
Good chat, boys.
Yeah. Really good chat. Okay, we'll take a quick break. When we return, Sammy wants to talk a little docuseries with the Oiler Dynasty.
Yeah, have you seen this?
No.
Yeah.
Mm. All right.
Okay.
We'll discuss when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective, Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. As a reminder, this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee.
So I just want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Off the top, we talked about the Shanahan stuff.
Yeah.
And yesterday, yeah, I thought we did one of, I got a lot of messages about yesterday saying it was a fabulous Leafs hour. And people
where
loved
we
it.
Broke down the best of and the worst of the last decade.
Did you get it a little? Maybe you'll hear something about that one.
Yeah. Not a little. Not like you to walk it back.
Did you get a little?
I got a call.
Okay.
And then I responded with, well, Sammy and Justin were just as bad. They were just as bad.
But guess what? I'm not Nick Kiprios.
And then she said, what is wrong with you?
Oh.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I got a call from my wife.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I wanted to ask you guys about something. There's a two-part question here.
Okay.
I mean, we're just doing Leafs. We're in the story national. But there's a picture floating around on the internet of these guys. It was like Riley and Matthews and Marner and McCabe all at a golf club near here up in Caledon.
Pulpit.
And people were like, sent a tweet about that. And I mean, I don't care really about them, like whatever. But the question I had for you, because I sent a tweet about this today, the hat in the clubhouse thing. Okay. This is the question I want to ask, because I wear a hat on air all the time. I wear a hat 95% of my life. But like, if you were sitting down to dinner and you saw somebody wearing a hat, does that make you physically recoil like I do? Like, if I'm out for dinner with my wife and I see a guy like out on a date and he's wearing a hat at dinner.
That's not dinner.
But I mean, you're in a clubhouse. Shouldn't your hat be off? I would take my hat off at a clubhouse no matter what.
Hold on for a second.
Okay, yes.
Okay. We don't know what the rules are.
I mean, regardless of rules.
Okay, all right. So like, okay, who had a napkin in their lap, Sam?
No, I just think wearing a hat, sitting down in a clubhouse is a little bit. I don't have many old school morals, but that one for me is a little bit too much.
Off the golf course and you're having some beers and your hat's still on, what is the big deal?
A funny thing is at Rosedale, you actually have to don a top hat. So that's why he's not offended by it.
Okay. This, you know what I am offended? You know what I'm offended?
That picture got out?
Yes.
Yeah, it's stupid.
And whoever wrote it put 72 hours later. Oh,
my God. What are you supposed to be doing?
Oh, 72 hours later.
They better. I want you in a dark room for a week crying.
72 hours. Do you know why? Like,
you guys don't know what I would have been doing 72 hours after a season.
Do people not understand that, like, the correlation between golf and the NHL playoffs? It's an ongoing joke because it's true.
Yeah, guess what?
It's true.
It's been true
for 100 years.
There's a bit of crossover.
Your season's over. That night, you probably all get together, drink, do whatever you want to do, cry in your beer, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it's like we're going to go out for dinner the next night, which they all did. Mm-hmm. You, as a team, it's just standard. Yeah. We're going to go out because everybody's planning on going home.
Yeah.
So we're going to spend 2 or 3 days together because that's what teams do. And then on the third day, you're going to go golf. Okay. And people are linking their lack of caring to that picture. It's
I'm insane. Not people
I'm,
who
I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed for that picture.
Yeah.
I agree. Totally agree.
72 hours later, because 96 hours later, everyone's gone.
I'm glad that we, town. I mean, it's not good radio, but we all just agree.
Yeah.
But just to confirm the dinner thing.
I do believe you should not be.
If I go to a restaurant and I see a person wearing a hat at dinner, yeah. I think it's the most offensive thing. But I wear a hat on TV and people hate that too. So maybe I'm talking on both sides of my mouth. I don't know.
Also possible.
It's a possibility people see us at dinner and they're offended.
At all.
I'm leaving. I'm leaving the room.
Oh, my God. I got to go.
No Kipper and Bourne show. No, I'm out of here.
For me.
This is really, I know we only have a couple minutes here, so maybe it's a perfect time to bring this up. I saw this on the Sportsnet website today as I was looking for our news and notes segment that there is going to be, so a while away, 2027. So, I mean, that's not breaking news, but there's going to be a docuseries on the Oilers dynasty. With, you know, it's apparently Ryan Reynolds' production house is putting, you know, Gretzky, Messi. It's going to be called The Great Ones. An unprecedented look at the lives and careers of the Oilers players who helped them win 5 Stanley Cups between 1984 and 1990. I'm counting down the days.
But there's been a ton of stories already. Mm-hmm. Like, what is left to cover? Like, is there new footage?
Has there been a comprehensive
new
one?
Checks to cash.
Has there been a...
I think there has been.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I would have seen it.
Boys on the bus. Yeah. I don't know, but is there new footage? Is there new angles that you can go through? It's been pretty well... The stories over the years have been pretty well told.
It is pretty cool, though. Usually, when a major production house aims at an event like this, like in the 30 for 30s,
yeah.
They start digging in for footage and stuff. Yeah, I hope you're right. If it comes out, I hope that there's some new good stuff.
I do think, like, I love these kind of things. And during the pandemic, that the Michael Jordan one.
Yeah, Last Dance. My problem with all these docuseries.
That they're produced by the people that are in them.
Now we are no longer getting third
unbiased party.
Yes, they're now like the Players Tribune articles
yeah.
where it's just, you know, whitewashing the events.
For sure, I get that.
The victor gets to tell the stories.
But I'm just hoping for new footage and all that sort of stuff. I love sports documentaries. I'm just like, any sports documentary you put in front of me, like those bad sport ones on Netflix, I'll watch any sports documentary.
Those are really good.
I will watch literally any of them.
They're really good.
Yeah, they are.
They're really good. I like the new ones too, because the one that we broke down for the Leafs, All or Nothing,
yeah,
told us a lot.
Well, the original Road to the Winter Classics were unbelievable. The first year with Babs, Detroit.
Oh, my God.
You know, you can actually see the whiteboards, and I used to take screenshots.
I don't know. If I ran a team, I'm like, out.
The hell out. Out.
Yeah. Well, Hard Knocks is like the most famous one. It kind of the one that HBO does every
NFL
training camp, and they're doing the Bills this year,
but they,
which is really
most
exciting.
Most teams want nothing to do with that.
Of course. I mean, it's...
You know, what good comes of it?
It's horrible. It's like full... I mean, look what happened to the Giants. They have that meeting with the owner where he's like, if Saquon goes to the Eagles and he's good, I'm really going to be pissed. He goes and wins the Super Bowl
MVP
2,000 yards.
Later.
Like, yeah, it's like, that's not what you want.
It does really expose that... I'll never forget Ray Ferraro dressing beside him with the Rangers and Dick Todd's doing a speech for us, and he's joking around, of course. But then Ray looks at me and goes, you know, you spend your whole life in the greatest league in the world, and that's the help you get.
Yeah.
And I feel like...
I'd have been great friends
with Ray. I feel like people like that have this mystique about professional sports, mm-hmm. and then it's like drawing the curtains and seeing, you know, that wizard who's five foot two.
We're going to have to let the curtain go, and teams are going to have to be accepting of that. It's a bunch of doofus jocks.
Yes, it is.
Being like, I don't know what
and
do
even
you think?
Doofus owners and doofus general managers and
rich people, not all that smart either necessarily.
And they're full of crap like everybody else.
The last one was like, Jack Eichel goes out for dinner. I'm like, oh my God. Holy God. I'd rather watch paint dry.
Wow, that's a fast hour. I will say this, of all the shows that we've done, this is one of them.
It was.
Our thanks to David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, NHL on Sportsnet. We are back tomorrow Off the Rails Friday. We're going to find Doug McLean.
And Keith Pelly's talking tomorrow at 1. So we'll have a Leafs Hour tomorrow.
Big day.
Have a great night, everybody.